Hi everyone, welcome to STEPS audio channel. We are very excited to share our content from STEPS events to learn all about the latest trends in startups, digital media, fintech, future tech, and wellness in emerging markets. You can find us on Enagami, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts. Make sure to subscribe to your favorite channel, and we hope you enjoy the content.
We are ready for the next speaker. How many of you have attended a class at Stanford? Okay, a number of hands. Today we have a Stanford instructor, Chris Yeh, who taught the class Blitzscaling with his co-author, Reid Hoffman. Chris is going to talk about the Blitzscaling strategies, how you can build a startup that will scale and win most of your market. Chris has been in the Bay Area for over 20 years and has been my friend for 20 years. In fact, we're business partners, and he is a fantastic speaker and will be talking to you about Blitzscaling. Mr. Chris Yeh, please join us.
Thank you, Jeremiah. And as you can tell, in addition to everything else, Jeremiah is also my fashion consultant. He tells me what to wear, and I go ahead and wear it. So let's talk about Blitzscaling. So if you know me, you probably know me because of the book Blitzscaling, which I wrote with this very famous guy, Reid Hoffman. And the book is something that came out of our class at Stanford. Reid's life, of course, is largely the inspiration. In addition to being the founding board member at PayPal, the first outside investor in Facebook, the founder of LinkedIn, the Series A lead investor in Airbnb, and of course, a major investor in OpenAI. Whew, that was a lot to get out. We wanted to answer the question of what was the secret of Silicon Valley? Now, how many folks were born somewhere other than Silicon Valley, San Francisco Bay Area? Most folks, right? We all came here for a reason. The question is, why? And most of those answers that people give are incorrect. They say it's because Silicon Valley is successful because it's amazing schools like Stanford University. Of course, I love Stanford University, but there are great schools everywhere. They say it's because they have brilliant venture capitalists like Jeremiah here. I'm like, well, you know, there's brilliant people everywhere. The difference with Silicon Valley is something that we set out to explore with this Stanford class, and we ultimately realized is the principle of blitzscaling. Working well, what I've been told is there's a slight buffer on the slides, so I will get to the slides first. Anyways, you can see this is Reid's career, which is pretty remarkable when you think about it. All right, so the secret we discovered is blitzscaling. Now, we define blitzscaling as the pursuit of rapid growth by prioritizing speed over efficiency in the face of uncertainty. How many people in this room are entrepreneurs or want to be entrepreneurs? Awesome. So I'm betting all of you like the idea of rapid growth. I have been all over the world. I have never seen an audience say, I want my company to stagnate until it dies. But do you want to prioritize speed over efficiency? That sounds kind of risky. And that's because it is. And the question becomes, what are the circumstances under which you would want to incur such a risk? Now, the answer comes from the great philosopher Ricky Bobby of the movie Talladega Nights. In that movie, he had a saying, if you ain't first, you're last. The reason to blitzscale, the reason to take on that additional risk is to win a valuable winner-take-most market, or as we like to call it, a Ricky Bobby market. So what is it that you need to have in order to blitzscale? Because again, people try blitzscaling, it does not always succeed. First, you need to have a winner-take-most market. Usually, in the technology industry, that's because of network effects. So with a product like Facebook, for example, the more users there are, the more valuable it becomes to each individual user. Facebook with one user is useless. Facebook with a billion users is something that many people use on a daily basis. So when you have a network effect, that tends to drive a winner-take-most market because at a certain point, the network value is greater than the product value, which means that nobody can catch up with you. Even if they make the same product you have, sometimes even if they make a better product, they won't be able to catch up. The other thing you're looking for is some sort of distribution advantage. If the objective is to grow to a size where nobody can catch up with you, You need to have go-to-market advantages that allow you to outgrow the competition. This is where a lot of people get something wrong about blitzscaling. People sometimes think, especially its critics, that blitzscaling is just about spending a lot of money on marketing and advertising. Not true. You may have to spend a lot of money on marketing and advertising, but clearly you need to be better at it than the competition, right? Spending money is necessary but insufficient. You need to have the ability to drive that competitive advantage. And then finally, you still ultimately need what we call the necessary elements of blitzscaling. Things like product market fits so your success is sustainable. Things like a big market with high gross margins so you can make money. And of course, the ability to scale up the operations. So these are the things you need to look for if you want to blitzscale. At Blitzscaling Ventures, we look at a lot of different companies, hundreds of companies each month. And in general, we find that it's probably single-digit percentage, 5%, maybe a little bit more, that are actually blitzscalable. But the ones that are blitzscalable are the ones that drive the massive returns, like an Amazon, an Apple, an Airbnb, a Google, a Facebook, and so on. Now, why am I here at this particular festival? I also want to talk to you about artificial intelligence, which everyone's been banging on today. So artificial intelligence is one of the reasons why blitzscaling is going to be more important than ever. Let me tell you about this book, Impromptu. This is a book that we put out in March of last year. It's a book that Reed and I and a couple of other folks working together wrote in February of last year and published in March. So we completed this book in a single month using AI, using GPT-4. 70% of the words in the book are from GPT-4. And it's all about the future of AI and humanity, how AI can amplify humanity. I'm not going to cover the entire book today. We only have 20 minutes, and I've already used at least 6 or 7 of them. However, you can get this book for free. If you go to impromptubook.com, you can download the PDF and read it for free. If you go to Amazon, you can get the Kindle version for 99 cents, because Jeff Bezos likes being rich and charges money for everything. And you can also order, if you really want, a paperback or hardcover version. But what this book does is it talks about what are the things that are going to happen as a result of this AI revolution. Now, one of the funny things is I am not Reed's most famous AI disciple. That would be this guy, Pope Francis, who recently became the first pope to address the G7, specifically to talk about AI. Now, how do I know that Pope Francis is Reed's disciple? Because last year, I remember I was reaching out to Reed. Hey, Reed, we need to work on this thing. He says, sorry, I'm busy for the next 2 days. I'm with the Pope. All right, well, you know, I guess that's an acceptable excuse. We'll take that. But the reason why the Pope, right, the Pope is interested in AI is because he understands it is going to change everything. And if you don't believe me, ask NVIDIA shareholders. Anyone here an NVIDIA shareholder? Hopefully you've been holding since the IPO, because if so, you would have multiplied your money by 3,000 times. I mean, just look at it. It's astonishing. You put $5,000 into NVIDIA at its IPO, you'd be sitting on $15 million today. Now, I'm not telling you to go out and buy NVIDIA now. I do not make any stock recommendations. But you can see that this is a reflection of the massive interest in AI and the fact that the entire world is investing in order to make things change. Now, you've heard from some folks, and Andreessen Horowitz and others, saying, oh my gosh, is this an AI bubble? Are we ever going to be able to make enough revenues? Those folks are nuts, because they're making an unfair comparison. They're saying, here's the amount of money that's being spent on AI infrastructure, and here's the amount of revenue that people are paying to access that AI infrastructure. That doesn't make sense. The point of all that AI infrastructure is to affect all the businesses in our economy. So measuring it based on pure AI revenue by AI service providers is absolutely insane. My guess is they're not dumb. My guess is they're just trying to talk down the valuations a bit. So what is true is that AI is almost certainly the biggest wave that we are going to experience in our lifetimes. Now, a lot of people say that because they want to sell you something. I promise you, I was already giving away a book. I'm not trying to sell you anything. But I do believe that AI is going to have a massive impact. And that's because the Industrial Revolution, which many people compare it to, had such a profound impact on human history. Now, I love history, love researching ancient empires and things. If you look at this chart, you'll see that we are looking at human history from 1000 BC, that's after the Bronze Age collapse, right around the time that we're starting to see the rise of the Neo-Assyrian Empire, all the way through to the present day. And you can see that for most of human history, that per capita GDP, how much stuff we create, what value we have, what we have to live on, remains static. It might increase a little bit when there's a particularly good empire, go down when there's a Black Death, but pretty much the same. Until 1750, when the Industrial Revolution changed everything and produced orders of magnitude increase in per capita GDP. Now, with AI, we're operating off a much higher base. It's going to be difficult for us to increase GDP by 1,000 times. But we are going to see significant increases and probably bigger increases than you've heard predicted. And that's because there is a direct analog. On the AI side, on the Industrial Revolution side, it was all about replacing muscle power with mechanical power. So for the first time, instead of using a horse or an ox, you could use steam or electricity. And that produced massive productivity gains. The first industry to industrialize was the British textile industry. And they saw a 40x increase in labor factor productivity during the first few decades of the Industrial Revolution. That's the kind of impact that drives and changes fundamentally economies. On the AI side, we're talking about replacing human brain power with computing power. And we're already seeing massive gains. I want to apologize in advance. Anybody in the audience, a lawyer or in law school? Okay, a few. Or you're a reformed lawyer, not really a lawyer anymore. But here's the thing. One of the things you do in law is to do contract reviews. Let's say you're reviewing an NDA, something that happens millions of times a day. It turns out that with AI, a lawyer can conduct 300 times as many contract reviews in the same period of time. That's a 300x increase in productivity. And we're not going to see that for everything, but those kinds of increases are going to drive massive changes in the economy. And the reason why we think it's relevant to blitzscaling is because AI is creating more winner-take-most opportunities. We have a natural learning effect. We have the traditional network effects. And so AI companies are blitzscaling as we speak. And the ones that fail, even when they've achieved significant traction, are still selling out. Character.ai, many of you saw that transaction happen recently. One of the most popular AI products out there, and yet the founders packed up shop and sold to Google. Why? They, despite their traction, could not compete with the massive cost of the traditional foundational models. So we're going to see a lot of consolidation, and it's going to happen in that next 36 to 48 months. But I'm still excited about AI because it allows us to break the iron triangle of constraint. Traditionally, in the software industry, we have had to choose between faster, cheaper, and better. Sometimes you can get 2 out of 3, but you can never get 3 out of 3. Yet with AI, that's what we're actually seeing. We're seeing products that can be faster, cheaper, and better. Now, by the way, they may not be better out of the box just with the AI itself. But when AI is combined with human judgment and human taste, you can actually achieve better product quality than just with human work alone. But the thing that is really exciting is the stuff that hasn't happened yet. So faster, cheaper, and better are three of the ways that you can create value. But the fourth and most important is to do something new that has never been done before. Many of you remember Steve Jobs introducing the iPhone. Before Steve Jobs introduced the iPhone, we had a whole market for cell phones. It was a big market, because people wanted to buy cooler phones, different form factors, flip phones, get better ringtones. But Steve Jobs transformed telephony, right? He made it something new that had never existed before. And as a result, the iPhone is probably the most valuable product in the world, and it fundamentally altered how we all think about it. Does anyone have a flip phone, a non-smartphone in your pocket right now? Not even one enthusiast, huh? No. Right? I want the old people in the audience to tell me if you recognize this. Na 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 na. I could see people recognition. There was a company called Nokia that in 2007 was the world's most valuable telephony company, and in 2010 was out of business, out of the phone business at least, because of Steve Jobs, because of the power of new. We're at the very beginning with AI. Right now, people are applying AI to make things faster, cheaper, and better. When they apply AI to do things that were never possible before, that's when we're going to see even more increases in value. Now, the final thing I want to leave you with, two things. First, many of you may be in an existing industry of some kind. And the question becomes, is my industry screwed or not? Is AI going to help me or hurt me? And to answer that question, you have two questions that you need to ask. The first is, how much can AI amplify or replace human brain power? As we just saw earlier with the example of the Industrial Revolution, with the example of the lawyers, the greater the amplification, the bigger the magnitude of the effect, good or bad. But the second one is, how elastic is the demand curve? Now, in the case of the textile industry, clothes becoming much cheaper caused people to buy more clothing. And the demand curve was so elastic that the textile industry dramatically increased in size. Because so much more clothing was being purchased, so much more economic value was created, the industry employed more people than it did when everything was done manually. On the other hand, I would argue that the demand curve for legal services is inelastic. When law goes on sale for 75% off, how many of you buy more of it? Not that often. I was speaking with somebody today who was actually conversing with some of the top managing partners at law firms. They don't want to admit this publicly, but they understand what's going on. What this top law firm was doing is what they were planning to do is they said, we're creating our own internal AI tool. When we have a legal job to do, the partner who's doing the job is going to answer 40 or 50 questions, and then our AI is going to take an hour and produce all the documents that would have taken 100 hours for our associates to produce. And so what are they going to do? Guess what? In 10 years, there'll be 1/10 as many lawyers as there are today. So if you are in an industry where you have massive ability to amplify your productivity, but your demand curve is inelastic, it's time to start thinking about how you change that. Because that inelastic demand curve means that the prices of supply will inevitably go lower and somebody will keep compete on price until your industry is in the basement. But if your demand curve is elastic, if AI is going to help you sell more than ever before, your entire industry could potentially be even greater than it is today. So finally, leave you some personal thoughts on how to use AI. These are the things that you'll find in Impromptu, but I wanted to share them with you here as well. The first is, you have to think of AI as an undergrad research assistant. Knows everything, it knows everything, but understands nothing. So I happen to have a daughter who is now a junior, but I remember when she was a freshman, I remember her various friends. They're very smart, but they can only do so much. AI has incredible breadth of knowledge, but it does not have the wisdom that you necessarily have. So what you should do is you should treat it like a research assistant. Allow it to do the initial work for you, but then come around at the back end and actually apply your human judgment, the thing that makes you valuable. Think of yourself as a movie director, not a carpenter. One of the people who helped us on the book is actually a former executive producer of The Daily Show. And so he came to us with an entertainment background. He said, you know what? It's kind of like being a director on a movie. When you're a director, you don't control the actors like robots. You have to ask them things like, make me feel fear, make me feel like you're in love. And directors don't try to get it right the first time, unless you're on Saturday Night Live, different story. But they try to do multiple takes, and they pull together the best of those takes. So that's how you should work with AI. Instead of believing that AI is like a hammer that will do the same thing every time, you're going to try different variations and ultimately put it together into the single best scene. Just do it. Experiment. Don't debate. You're here today because you're very smart. Smart people are very good at assessing and evaluating, coming up with options, and making a decision. That's why we're in the room we're in today. But AI is so fast and so cheap that in many cases for your daily life, you're better off just trying it. Right? During the time it took you to debate which approach to take, you could have had AI do all the approaches and just evaluate the actual results. And so the people who I've met who have done the most with AI are the ones who, even if they had no prior AI experience, machine learning experience, are the ones who dove in and just experimented with. I have one friend who ran a hedge fund. He's written his first book using AI. I have another friend, a fellow who works for Reid Hoffman in his office, who actually does nothing but experiment with GPT-4 approximately 8 to 12 hours a day. He's shown me some amazing things that he's done, like virtual companies he set up where all of the employees are instances of ChatGPT that are talking with each other and producing things. So try things out. And then finally, avoid what I call the Turing trap. Let humans be humans, let AI be AI. There's an instinct we have with AI, because it's so sexy and so magical, to use it on the sexiest things possible. So it's like, yes, let's have it diagnose and cure cancer. Let's have it write a Star Wars sequel that's better than the ones we got. Okay, fine. I don't think AI is best suited for some of those things, right? AI is something that has the ability to do things that computers can do. Computers are great at things that are data intensive, routine, and tedious. Do you know who's not good at those things? Human beings. So with AI, I encourage, especially the entrepreneurs out there, to search out the boring, the annoying, the tedious, and figure out how to take that out of our lives. Because if you do that, you are going to generate value and make money for yourselves. So just a quick recap on artificial intelligence. So blitzscaling is all about winning a winner-take-most market. You're going to prioritize speed over efficiency when you found a Ricky Bobby market where the winner is going to be a big winner and where you have a go-to-market advantage. AI is going to reward blitzscaling because of the ways in which it helps create those Ricky Bobby markets and because AI is generating such a massive increase in productivity. The true value is not just in faster, cheaper, better, though those are great. It's in looking for those new applications, the new things that were not possible before, like the iPhone, like so many others. And if you are able to use all of these different tools, it has not repealed the laws of startups. All of you entrepreneurs out there, most of your startups will fail. That's life. I have failed over and over again. But we are in one of the most amazing environments for startups in history. You are so lucky to be alive and young enough to ride this wave right now. So if you are on the fence at all, I encourage you to think about this as being the perfect time to create something new and amazing. Thank you guys so much. If we have any time left over, I'm happy to take questions. If we don't have time, I will also cede the stage. So it's entirely up to my colleague in crime here. Oh. Jeremiah wants to remind something of you. If you happen to like this symbol, our blitzscaling scale bolt, it's the combination of a lightning bolt and up and to the right, we actually have one of our portfolio companies here on the demo floor today, GGX, Global Goods Exchange. They have a limited supply of Blitzscaling Ventures baseball caps. So if you want to go over, check out the company, get a demo, get a hat. If you happen to have your copy of Blitzscaling, find me sometime today, and I will happily sign it as well. But we are so delighted to be a part of Step SF. Anything else, Jeremiah? All right.
All right. Thank you, Chris. Yay.
Thank you, guys.
Co-author of Blitzscaling, founder of Blitzscaling Ventures.
Thank you for tuning in. We hope you enjoyed the episode. You can find our content on Anghami, Spotify, and Apple Podcast. Follow us on social media at Step Conference, and let's stay in touch.